It's Wednesday, March 28th, at about 3:55. We've got several items on the agenda, and the first one up would be a resolution. And is Senator Koch here? If not, we'll set that aside for the time being. Not seeing Senator Koch, we'll move to another resolution, number two on at least our agenda, and that's Senator Carlson. Senator Carlson, welcome to the committee. This is a resolution, and you're looking for a motion to pass.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This resolution memorializes the President of the United States and Congress to take action to protect Minnesota lakes, rivers, and streams from threats due to the invasive carp. And so, members, there's a lot of whereases, and we all know about how many lakes and rivers and streams we have and what we need to do to protect. And we really do need the federal government to intervene on our behalf in the lower parts, the states below us, Iowa, and those all the states around us that have some of these invasive species, and to do the right thing and let's get rid of these invasive species. And so this just is a resolution to the Congress and to the President to help us out here. I'd be happy to read the entire resolution if that would be your wish.
Please, no.
I thought that would be the case.
Senator Bach?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Some of you have been here a while. Senator Cohen's been around a long time. Senator Metzen, have we ever had any luck sending these resolutions to Congress where they actually acted and did anything, or did anybody ever read it even? Maybe we should send it certified mail to them or something, so at least someone has to sign for it.
The chairman.
Senator Cohen.
I know something about this.
They've got a room.
And this is when we were in the majority. I gave the speech a couple of times, but members didn't pay attention.
Senator, how long is the speech, Senator Cohen?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carlson, I'll tell you what I know about this. There was an article about 10 years ago in the New York Times that there are a couple file cabinets somewhere in the Capitol building in room whatever. And when these resolutions come in from various state legislatures, they put them in the file cabinet. And it was a pretty decent-sized article in the New York Times about that. So I'll support it, but I know where it's going. It's going to the file cabinet in room whatever in the U.S. Capitol building.
Oh, okay. Anyone else? Senator Carlson, we're not going to reword the resolution.
Need another file cabinet.
Senator Carlson, would it be your intent that these be copied to our congressional delegation?
Mr. Chair, that is exactly correct.
Okay. See that? So they won't end up in that file cabinet. Then they may be different file cabinets.
We're in charge.
Mr. Chair, perhaps there would be multiple file cabinets then, yes. Okay.
They may only save one copy.
WB file.
Okay.
Waste basket.
We need a motion that Senate File 2206 be recommended to pass. Would somebody make such a motion?
I move,
if
Mr.
desired,
Chair.
Okay.
You know, if you couldn't get a motion, maybe we could take care of this right now.
Okay, we have a motion. Any further discussion?
I move the bill, Mr. Chair.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. And
thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you.
Good luck.
I will.
Senator Koch is here at Senate File 2187, a resolution memorializing the President and the Congress to enact legislation, or at least, the interim storage. Okay.
All right. Mr. Chair and members, thank you. Senate File 2187 is a nuclear bill for everybody, whether you support the expansion of nuclear power or not. This is a resolution to Congress to begin cleaning up the mess. Since 1982, when the U.S. Congress passed the Nuclear Waste Policy Act, they've been taking fees out of everyone's electric bill. The total's up to over $30 billion now and climbing every day. Every month we pay our bills. It goes into a fund. No action or very little action has been taken on storing of the waste. And so President Obama put together a panel, a Blue Ribbon Commission on Nuclear Waste, and they've made a recommendation to do interim storage while they still figure out the permanent storage issue. And so this is authorizing them to move forward with that plan. So,
Senator Polk, do you have an amendment?
There is an amendment, Mr. Chair, and it's just to make it, I'll let you hand it out, but all this does is, in this language, we've got the Secretary of the Senate right drafting the resolution. It should more appropriately be the State of Minnesota and the Secretary of State drafting this resolution.
Senator Michelle, would you move the amendment?
Move the A1, Mr. Chair.
Move the A1. Okay. Motion to move the A1 amendment. All in favor of that, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay, and that is moved. Any further discussion on the resolution as amended? Might there be a motion?
Also.
Motion by Fishback to that Senate File 2187 as amended be recommended to pass. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay, and thank you, Senator Koch.
Thank you, committee. So I went there.
Okay, moving on. Senator Olson. This is a late bill. Senator Olson, welcome to the committee.
Yeah, thank you,
that's a good idea.
Chairman and members. I don't even have the bill with me, so can you tell me the number?
Senate File 2482. I'm sorry, I should have announced
you.
That.
Senate File 2482 is the actually it's the governor and department's recommendations for changes in the finance. A couple of dimensions of our last bill, and we thought it was would be recognized as our quote mini omnibus bill, and would have met the deadline, but apparently it was not, and we do intend to use that for some additional provisions that we will be working through with the House and the governor. And so I hope that you will not hold it hostage here and allow us to continue and finish our work.
Why'd you get here?
Is it here in the first place?
I'm sorry.
Just, Mr. Chairman, we're wondering how the bill got here in the first place or what?
It's a late bill.
It's a late bill.
It's a late bill, Senator Metzen.
Okay.
So it's a late bill and
Well, Mr. Chairman, if it was recognized as a finance bill, it really wouldn't have been late. So somebody made that interpretation. We feel that was a wrong interpretation, so we hope you will allow it to free it, allow us to finish our work.
Chairman, I will move to free it.
Free it from Free Willy.
Freedom is a wonderful thing. Senator Olson, do you have some thoughts as to where this bill should go?
It should go to finance.
Okay. I'm told here that we need a motion to suspend JR, Joint Rules, in other words, 2.03 for Senate File 2482, for all further proceedings on the bill, and I suspect refer it to Finance. Might there be such a motion? Senator Roebling.
Mr. Chair, I make the motion.
Okay. Motion as stated. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Thank you, Senator Olson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you.
Senator.
Hey, kids.
Senator Rosen, Senate File 2262.
Hey.
Welcome to the committee, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The first time I've been in front of the Almighty Rules Committee. So this is the provider peer grouping.
I moved the table.
Time getting out of here.
Second.
I said Almighty. I didn't say something else.
Senator Rosen, I just ramped up a little bit.
I got everybody awake now. That's the problem. We actually amended this bill onto Senator Hamm's community benefits bill today. And this is the provider peer grouping program, which was that adopted in 2008 in a bipartisan manner in the healthcare reform. So this bill is basically addressing some of the problems that the provider peer grouping process has been giving the providers, and it's giving an opportunity to review and verify their data before it was published. This has been greatly worked on, and it was a work in progress, and we came to agreement last week. The Medical Association, the Hospital Association, and the health plans have agreed upon it. Any of the extended use language that was an issue with some people has been taken out, and the encounter data information. And with that, it looks like there's no fiscal note. It's fiscal note neutral. It's a bill that absolutely the hospitals and providers need to get straightened out so they can move forward in pricing and quality measures. And I would appreciate your support, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Senator Rosen. Senator Rosen, do you have an idea where this bill might go if it were let to go?
I believe to the floor.
Doesn't that show fiscal?
Mr. Chair?
Who's that, Senator Limmer?
Yes. Senator Rosen, what is encounter data?
Encounter data is basically there's pricing and there's encounter data. And encounter data is...
so we just forget it. Worry about it next time.
It's probably got information about specifics of the patient. The age, name, and all that has been taken out.
Does, Mr. Chair, does... counter data, is that classified as in data privacy rules as let's say private privacy? Is it private data, public data?
Well, the data that was in Mr. Chair and
Senator Rosen, I'm sorry.
The information that was in the bill was just on if it was a white female with what kind of condition, from what. And where they were treated, but it has no other specifics. And there's no changing, no information sharing. The information just stays with the provider. And I know there was a question, Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, whether this should go to your committee, but all the information that was questionable and it should have gone to your committee was taken out. Council did agree upon that last night. Ms. Pontius ruled on that, and it should be fairly...
So, Mr. Chair, no identifiable data.
All Mr. Chair, no.
All right.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Rosen, there is a fiscal note with this. It's for the health care access fund. Or did you take it
out? Mr. Chair and Senator Roebling, the $1.1 million, everything is gone. All the language has been amended. There is no fiscal note. The $1.1 million, it's gone. And I could, I should show you where that's at.
I just made that first motion. That 1-1 in there, see?
Mr. Chair and Senator Roebling, it is Section 8 on the last page. Within available resources, the last line. So there is no fiscal impact.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rosen, are you saying that since this was amended on to Senator Hand's bill earlier, you're here today, are you saying you want it to proceed in both manners, one along with Senator Hand, but also as a standalone?
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Ortman, thank you very much for that. Yes, I would like to, because this is such an important issue for the hospitals and providers. We are just being extra careful.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
I think the work that you did to build collaboration on this is really important, and I wouldn't want to lose it either. I don't know what's going to happen with Senator Hand's bill, but I would move that Senator Rosen's Senate file 2262 be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor.
Thank you.
Senator Consul, can maybe help with that motion a little bit? I think we need to suspend a rule.
Okay, thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman, since this was a late bill, what the committee needs to do, if it would like the bill to move further, is to vote to suspend the provisions of Joint Rule 2.03 for all further proceedings on the bill. And then the committee report will be adopted that places it in general orders.
Senator Ortman, might that be your motion?
Mr. Chair, that would be my motion.
Okay, a motion by Senator Ortman to suspend Joint Rule 2.03 on Senate File 2262. For all further proceedings on the bill. So that is the motion. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay, and the bill moves on. It's free.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. Thank you, Senator Ortman.
Okay, we have House File 2244, Senator Cruz. This is here because it establishes a board with senators. Senator Cruz, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I especially appreciate that you were able to sneak me in today. This is actually the second hearing I've had on this bill today. So,
Mr. Chair, there's no sneaking here. I think you're on television, Senator Cruz. There's
Senator
no
Cruz,
sneaking.
You have been on television more than anyone in the Senate in the last couple of days. So.
And some of us are tired of it.
Well, with all that said, I appreciate you getting me in for this quick hearing. As you mentioned, Mr. Chairman, let me start here. House File 2244, as we have it before us right now, is our School Trust Lands Commission legislation, and that is with the Senate language amended on to it. Probably the two provisions that are most appropriate for our Rules Committee today would be Section 6, and essentially what Section 6 of the legislation does is it creates a new Legislative Citizens Permanent School Fund Commission in the legislative branch to replace the Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee. This commission consists of 16 members, two public members appointed by the Senate, two public members appointed by the House, four public members appointed by the governor, four members of the Senate, including two from the minority party, and four members of the House, including two from the minority party. This legislation also creates an advisor position in MMB. So with that, I would stand for any questions.
Mr. Chair. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we just heard this in finance this morning. But this actually replaces the advisory committee, which also has 16 members, and there are legislators on there currently. We serve without any compensation at this point. This asks for the same. There is a bit of an improvement here, though, I think, in that this says that we have two members appointed by the House and two by the Senate, four. What has happened in the past, and this just became known to us last year, is it was committee chairs who were always on the advisory council. And in the Senate, there were never any Republicans for 38 years. And all of a sudden, we were all on it and had very little background or history of it. And so I think it would be a good idea to have a blend of minority-majority members on this. Because it would, you know, for transitional purposes, sometimes it's good to have some history on these issues. And this is an important issue. These members, we kind of consider ourselves trustees of the school trust lands. And you need to understand that issue and know what's going on with all those millions of acres of land. And so I think that we need to have some legislators on there. And so I certainly would speak to support that.
Anyone else? Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Cruz, line 8.24, where costs are certified against, is that the proceeds of the trust or 16A.125? We're certifying costs to cover the cost of the trust fund advisor and the Permanent School Fund Commission. Is that a holding account it goes into before the money actually goes into the trust, or what is that?
Senator Cruz.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Bach, that is actually costs that will be certified by the newly created commission. There is a small cost, about $24,000 a year for the Legislative Citizens Advisory Council, and then also that position out of MMB would be certified to the trust lands.
And then, Senator Bach? Mr. Chairman, Council's probably got, does that sound right?
I don't know.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Buck, 16A.125 is the state trust lands account. And I think what this language allows is to certify the cost for the salary for the advisor against the State Forest Trust lands. This is a little out of my area of knowledge here, but I think what Senator Cruz said is correct.
So, Mr. Bach? Mr. Chairman, Senator Cruz, so we're going to certify on line 8.22 and 8.23 the $24,000 of the commission, whatever the salary of the advisor is. What about the staffing levels over at MMB? I see up on line 8.4, the administrative services provided at MMB has to provide. Do those just come out of MMB's hide, or are any of those other costs for human resources, payroll, accounting, procurement, and other similar administrative services to the advisor, are they certified out of the trust also, or are we just asking MMB to take that out of their current budget?
Senator Cruz.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Bach, the only cost that would be certified against the trust lands would be that of the newly created advisor and the Legislative Citizen Permanent School Fund Commission. In the legislation, MMB is directed under current budget to facilitate that.
What?
Bach?
Well, sure. Mr. Chairman, there obviously is some administrative support to the advisor, to the research work that has to be done just at the beginning to identify all the lands. It seems like those should be certifiable costs, that there ought to be, MMB ought to assess the trust for the costs related to the advisor. I would think that MMB shouldn't have to eat that, and I don't think that's unreasonable to expect the trust to pick up that cost over at MMB. But obviously this bill's going to conference. That's something maybe you can talk about, but I mean, we're not talking about a lot of money here. Maybe there's one FTE over at MMB that is assigned to staff the actual advisor. But certainly there's some staffing level in addition to the advisor that seems like shouldn't be assessed to the general fund. It would only be fair to assess it to the school fund. But I don't have an amendment, but I just have something to think about as you go forward. Senator Cruz, I would like to get something signed on this subject, and this is radically different than what's moving through the other body and what's already passed. So I know the governor's got some real angst about the House bill that passed. I can't speak for him, but I don't believe he's supportive of it. I think this language is something more along the line he'd like to move. So just let me suggest you give some consideration to not putting any additional burden on the general fund relative to setting this position, staffing this position over at MMB.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Bach, I appreciate those comments, and I will most certainly take all of that into consideration. Right now, my focus is primarily on finishing getting it through this body. I do want to address your concern about the facilitation of that position in MMB. The legwork on getting it there and the labeling all those lands, discovering those lands, that is all taken care of through the Department of Natural Resources. They have expressed those costs in the fiscal note, so that those costs in defining those lands would not fall on MMB. It would in turn fall on the Department of Natural Resources, and they have a budget for that. They have taken that into the fiscal note.
Other questions? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Cruz, that is my understanding that this is a hybrid version. We have MMB being involved with sort of a director, and the DNR is still going to be fairly heavily involved with the management of the actual lands. They're still the field staff, isn't that correct? And maybe some of the support staff, too. I'm not sure how much clerical they do, but they are definitely still involved as field staff?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Roebling, yes, that is correct. In this legislation, the lands still remain under the purview of the Department of Natural Resources, and the commissioner would still ultimately have supervision over those lands.
Any other questions? Senator Metzen.
Yeah, kind of a question I ask about every time we get a bill like this that ask for new personnel. I mean, MMB has how many employees?
Senator Cruz.
Here's what I'm getting at. Every time, Mr. Chairman, somebody comes in this committee or any other committee, and we ask for another something to do, we need 2.5 more people. We need 5 people. We need 1 more person. You know, and some departments have head administration or whatever it is has 1,800 people or whatever example you could use. Why don't we just say no to some of these positions and say do it? And I've been saying this isn't anything new. Senator Michelle knows I've been saying this for 10, 12 years that, some departments have 800 people, 900. Now you got half a job or 1 job. Can you absorb it? Maybe not. And
you running for re-election?
Are we on TV? Thank you, Senator Limmer. But I have been saying this for a long time, and every single time.
Senator Metzen, maybe we should. I don't know if there's anybody from MMB here. Maybe we should ask.
Do it. Just do it. We're going to tell you to do it. But
is there anybody from the agency here? I guess not.
Mr. Chair, I would say we hardly ever get back a half a person either.
But, just if we don't, Mr. Chairman, if we don't do it on this one, I just would ask the committee to keep your eyes open on these kind of things. And
Senator Roebling and Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the DNR was going to hire someone like this to be kind of the manager. And so we're really taking that from them and putting it in MMB to sort of separate that issue, that the DNR is very much focused on conservation issues. But this person is supposed to be focused on raising money for the children of the state through the school trust fund. And so that's why we're separating them. And in some ways, it seems like this might be almost like a quasi-cabinet position, but mm-hmm. not a full commissioner.
Right.
And I agree with Senator Metzen, though. I am sick and tired of seeing these fiscal notes with all these halftime people. And, let's reprioritize some of these jobs. And when we say this is more important, let something else maybe not get focused on as much because we're saying the services need to be here now. But this is a little unique in that it was going to be a position that was hired. We're kind of looking at a model like from Utah, but it's not that same model. I think that in this case it's probably justified. I almost hate to say it. Maybe that we could take a person away from the DNR and do it, but they are going to be paid differently for this now out of that school trust fund also. So they may not have as much revenue coming from the fund because some of it's going to go to pay this for this position in MMB.
Senator Bach?
Well, Mr. Chairman, if this gets passed into law, this is a really big deal. I mean, and this position is really important. I took a look last week when I was home. I just happened to take a look at my St. Louis County plat book of thinking about this bill, and I thought, well, let me look at Burnside Lake over between where I live on Vermilion and Ely, the next lake to the east, because I know there's a lot of public land there. And sure enough, here's Section 16 sitting right in the middle of Burnside Lake, an entire section of Lakeshore on the north side of Burnside, and the map even says School Section Bay. That is raising no money for the trust. And we are talking miles and miles and miles of shoreline, an entire township on one lake. I mean, there are hundreds of millions of dollars here that can be generated for the permanent school fund. I just looked at one section in one lake, one page in the St. Louis County plat book. There's a lot of work that needs to be done here by somebody, whoever this advisor is going to be, and the school trust fund is going to have a huge benefit by this. That's why, Senator Cruz, this is very important that we negotiate something out between the House and the Senate so that we can get something signed here, because the DNR has had these conflicting management objectives, and the school fund has not been managed, I think, in their best interest, particularly for the trust. For probably maybe since statehood, but and I don't want to short them or argue over a half a FTE or an FTE when we're talking about potentially hundreds of millions of dollars to the trust. So, and I think those costs should be certified against the trust. And if that person needs 2 researchers to identify those townships and what should be put up for public sale that's not generating revenue for the trust, then let's charge two against it. If it takes three, let's charge three against it. It's a short-term problem here to get all the identification work done, but there's a pretty compressed timeline in here about when all these lands have to be identified for what the highest and best use to the trust is. So, and so as you work through that, I just would argue don't be shy about putting a couple FTEs assessed to the school fund over at MMB if that's what it takes. I mean, the DNR is taking $1.6 million a year out of the trust right now just for fire suppression. So, I mean, if we take a couple FTEs to identify what the highest and best use of some of this permanent school fund, remember there's 2.5 million acres of this. This is not going to be a small task. I think the timeline in here is probably awful aggressive, but certainly support moving forward and getting something signed into law.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Bakken,
Senator Cruz,
I sincerely appreciate those comments, and I think you hit the nail on the head. Having this one person, this advisor or director or whatever you want to call them, be solely responsible for this is something that we've never had here in the state of Minnesota. And I think it's something that most folks are in agreement on, that we need at least one of those people. And I agree with you in the fact that right now in the Department of Natural Resources, they have 130 FTEs dedicated to school trust lands. And I there's some folks that think that, you know, maybe that's one of those things that need to be looked at. And I say that all to say, in the long run, maybe by focusing a couple of these FTEs, as you mentioned, Senator Bach, into MMB, or having a little separation there, maybe we'll get a couple FTEs back on the other side of that. And who knows if it doesn't all balance out in the long run anyway.
Well,
Senator Bach,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cruz, my reason for mentioning it is if MMB doesn't have people they can reassign to this purpose, then I think we need to have enough flexibility in the staffing language here that the cost can be assessed to the trust. And so just that kind of goes back to my original question. I mean, I don't know if MMB has people just sitting around. I suspect they don't. And I wouldn't want this work not to get done when we actually have a way to pay for it, just assess the trust for it. So just make sure the language works so that the work can get done.
Yeah. Okay, further discussion on House File 2244. If not, is there a motion?
I move that House File 2244 be recommended to pass and placed on general orders.
Okay, motion by Roebling that House File 2244 be recommended to pass and placed on general orders. Further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay, and it shall be done.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Okay, Senate File 1694, Senator Jungbauer.
This came out of your committee.
Welcome to the committee, Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And hearing those powerful words, such as it shall be done, I'm awed and don't know where to start, I guess, on a small bill. Except, members, it's a fireworks bill, and it would be nice in Minnesota to say it shall be done, and we don't have to buy them all in Wisconsin or someplace else. So, Senate File 1694, members, in simple terms, just allows us to sell in Minnesota the same fireworks people are buying across the border and bringing into Minnesota to display in our state. We actually adopt definitions out of a standard book. The APA 87-1 is actually a book that defines different types of fireworks. And then we adopt a code book, the National Fire Protection Association Standard 1124-2006 edition, for all of our inspections and ways to put up tents and structures for those fireworks. In section, let's see where we're at here. When you're on line 3.1 on, we talk about the local unit of governments. Some of the local unit of governments, we had a set fee in there, and they said that there would be extra time probably to look at these structures under the code book the way we are asking for, so we allowed them to up that reasonable fee. We didn't change anything, just allowed them to change
Senator
that.
Jungbauer, I think maybe I'll just interrupt you. The referral here was a Rule 21 referral.
Oh, okay.
And it's specific to whether or not the bill was properly referred. Senator Marty had offered that that Rule 21, and it's not debatable on the Senate floor, so you're here before us today. Do you have any thoughts as to the proper referral of this bill?
Mr. Chair and members, no one else requested the bill. I specifically talked to Senator Vandeveer about this section on local government, and when he looked it over, he said it didn't change anything in terms of how they could do anything. We didn't change the structure of anything, so he was not interested in looking at the bill. Neither did anyone else request it, and I thought, members, that all our questions must have been answered in committee because Senator McGuire moved to call the question on the bill, so I just assumed that all debate had been satisfied in committee itself.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Jungbauer. Senator Marty, you moved a Rule 21 on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that. And two reasons. For one, I do believe it ought to go to state and local, but if it does not go to state and local, I think judiciary is an appropriate place and a place it should have been heard in any case. This is one of those times when we have multiple committees meeting at the same time.
Senator Martin, did you say judiciary?
It was in the but bill there. Was in judiciary committee, Mr. Chair.
Go proceed.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Chair, I was happened to have two committees at the same time. When it came time for the vote, I was in the other committee. People is bound to happen. Staff went down to get people to vote for it, and I had made it very clear I wanted to vote on this. Some of the advocates for firefighters came down to send a note into the committee I was in, the Health and Human Services Committee. I believe myself and one other Republican member wanted to be pulled up for the thing. I'm speaking for myself, however. And the committee staff stopped the page or sergeants from delivering the messages to us, so we had no way of knowing a vote was happening. And I think it's extremely troubling when staff from a committee are determining what messages get to committee members when it does change the outcome of the vote. So my reason for Rule 21-ing it is I'd like it to go back to judiciary so those of us who intended to vote on it, who were doing everything right, who had people coming to notify us of the vote, but were blocked by the committee staff. Not Senator Limmer's committee, had nothing to do with him or the committee. It was no wrongdoing here. I just don't know what I'm really troubled if people on one committee, I was told the reason they gave to the page or whomever was that we were in the middle of a vote, though when Senator Latz notified me that I had missed the vote, I don't recall any vote or any reason not to give a message to members of the Senate. And so I want to raise this in front of the Rules Committee because I think it's very, very disturbing if they're going to block communication with members of the Senate, whether it's from staff or from some advocate for one of the bills or whatever. And that's why I thought it should be going back to judiciary so that we could have a vote for all those who wish to be there. I don't know the outcome of it. I just know that this is a very troubling instance of us being blocked from getting information we want.
Senator Mark, could you just explain the blocking?
I mean, sure. Mr. Chair, Senator Latz is here as well. Some of the advocates went down to send notice into me, and I believe Senator Hall, who is also on the committee, who is also downstairs with me. And we were told we didn't get any message. We got no message. And the advocates were told that the page or the sergeant, whoever they asked to, were told by committee staff, no, we cannot give them the message now because they are in the middle of a vote. And as far as I know, there was no vote. And it seems to me that that should be up to us to decide what to do with the message, not somebody else.
Senator Jungbauer, you had your hand up.
Well, yes, Mr. Chair, members, I find that extremely troubling, as it was Senator McGuire that moved to call the question, because I was troubled as well that our own members couldn't get in Judiciary Committee that wanted to be there for the vote. So I was extremely troubled that the question was called at that point, because if Senator Marty is, as he's saying, it's troubling because somebody from his own team, per se, called the question, leaving a lot of members to not be able to get out of those multiple committees that did want to be there for the vote.
Senator Ortman and Senator Latz.
Mr. Chair and Senator Marty, I don't know which committee you were in or how the messages got blocked, but I know that I sent out messages, too, to try and bring in members. There were a lot of members not present at the time of that vote. And we all want everybody to be able to vote on bills. There's nobody that wants to take a vote and keep anybody away from it. And I'm sure that Senator Latz would agree. The table, because there were committees all working on that deadline, we had people in and out. We had people that were gone for more than an hour at a time because they were up in their own in another committee presenting a bill. But I don't think there was ever any intention. I tried to get people there, too, for votes, and we just had a really hard time doing that. I don't think there was anything intentional. If there was, I think people should know about that.
Senator Latz had a... Senator Latz?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. At the time that the question was called, there were 8 out of 13 members in the Judiciary Committee. And there was some additional time before the vote itself occurred, because subsequent to calling the question, there was a motion to lay the bill on the table, and the chairman and the staff considered the priorities parliamentarily of the pending motions, and then there was a vote on the motion to lay it on the table, and then the question was called. It so happened that just as the question was called and the vote was taken, Senator Newman, who had not been in the room but had been retrieved by staff to come back for the vote, walked in and, as it turns out, cast the deciding vote on a 5-4 vote to pass the bill out of committee and refer it to the floor. So what Senator Marty is saying is that it was a determinative result that he and apparently Senator Hall did not receive messages from the advocates in Health and Human Services that they were wanted for a vote upstairs, or that there was a vote occurring if they wanted to go upstairs. I don't know if the full Judiciary Committee was there, what the outcome would have been. But I can say that because, and I heard the same information from the advocates opposing Senator Jungbauer's bill, that they attempted to get messages through the sergeants to Senators Marty and Hall, and the sergeants were stopped from delivering those messages to those senators by HHS committee staff. And as it turns out, those may have been determinative votes had they been present in Judiciary. And that's the most, the blockage itself is what's most troubling. And I've never heard of any messages being blocked from being delivered to senators as they're sitting in a meeting.
Senator Marty and then Senator, I think you had your hand up, right?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and that is my concern. I understand. I don't know how Senator Hall would have voted. I don't know who all was in the room or not. I just know when somebody's trying to deliver us a note we wanted to receive, and then we don't get it. I don't think that should be somebody else's choice, and I think the Senate should have a clear policy that staff is not allowed to – staff can go out and get anybody they want. They can get any of us, but if some of us want to be obtained and want to get messages from people, I just think it's very troubling in the presence of another debate. I don't know that there was any intent of them to block people that way, but committee staff should not be telling people which messages we can get.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I don't know, and I have not heard of anybody being blocked from — this is the first I heard of anybody being blocked from getting messages. But I do know I sent both my legislative assistant and my intern to retrieve folks, and they could not get them out of other committees. And we were told the same thing, that they were in the middle of votes. We accepted that. And again, as well, I certainly would have not have moved to call the question either way, because I know people want to get their voices heard on issues like this. And so I wouldn't try to move something like that forward. And actually, I wanted to try to table the bill so that it could have been brought up later when everybody was there in order to take a vote on it, but that vote for tabling it was defeated. And I certainly had no control over when people came in and out of the room, though we tried to get other members there as well.
Senator Limmer, any thoughts? You were there. Not to put you on the
spot. Sure, I was there. I was there the whole time. That was Friday, deadline day. A lot of people moving, coming, going, taxes, finance, environment, I think, was a very big committee that morning. every member kind of makes his own priority of showing up at a committee and making a choice whether they stay at one at the expense of the other. It's the way this place works. It's not an ideal setting, but nevertheless, that's the way it works. And we certainly had put out calls for members to come repeatedly almost the whole morning, not only on this issue, but every issue. And Sarah, it was true. Sarah McGuire had tried to table the bill with a very small contingent of members. And I think Senator Ortman considered or moved a tabling motion or was considering that. So we had a very quick discussion of what had the more senior or the more dominant motion. And just as we were discussing that and calling a question, I think Senator Newman walked in. But I wish I had a dollar for every time I came in late to a meeting because I was stuck in one or two other committee meetings. It's just the way it works. I think it's up to the senators individually to weigh their priorities and be at the committee that they choose that they have to be at. I don't know how we can do it any other way.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I can inquire of Senator Lummer, I've been around here for a couple of years, too. I've been to a few meetings, and everything you said is correct. That's not the issue. The issue was, or is, were there staff who, of their own volition, chose not to deliver messages to senators who did want to come and make the vote? Put aside the issue that there's a lot of confusion during deadline days, there are a lot of moving pieces, and so on. That's the issue. Were there staff who, of their own volition, made a decision to not notify members of the state Senate who have the same election certificate as anybody in the body? That's the question.
Well, Mr. Chair, I might entertain that idea, but quite honestly, we're the ones that have taken oath of office. We're the ones responsible for our own votes. I don't rely on a lobbyist to give me a signal to run off to another room. That's my responsibility to get up and make sure I follow what's going on in another committee hearing. And that's what's going to happen when I go back home in an election year and have to explain why I wasn't there. So you can put it on a staff member, but deep down, when it really comes down to it, it's up to every one of us to show up at those at these committee hearings and keep an eye on what's going on. Not to mention, we all carry these things around, these cell phones, and if anybody wants to get a hold of us and jump over a staff, they certainly can text somebody too. So there's lots of different ways how a message could get to an individual senator.
Members, go ahead, Senator.
Let me just finish. First of all, I don't pay attention to text messages. I don't have one of those things, so you wouldn't get me. I guess I have a cell phone. Usually I keep it off. So I wouldn't get a message that way. For years, we have had pages, staff members, whatever, go get senators from other places, other committees, to come and make a vote. If we take your position, and maybe it's the right position, then let's assume from now on, staff members will not be used for that purpose for anybody, majority, minority, for any purpose. Staff members will not be allowed to go get a member from another room, another meeting, committee or otherwise, to come to room 107, 112, whatever. It should be one rule fits all for everything and every circumstance. So if what you say is correct and that we shouldn't rely on staff members to do that, then let's make sure we all understand the rules of the game at the front end of it. And Mr. Majority Leader, Mr. Chairman, if you want to bring an amendment to the rules of the Senate, to the floor of the Senate, relative to how we're going to handle those kind of situations, let's make sure we do it that way and have everybody understand how we operate from the front end.
Mr. Members, and I'll stand corrected by the Senate counsel, but we're here today on a Rule 21, which is about whether the bill was properly referenced to the right committee. And I believe in this case the right committee, at least in terms of reference, was to the floor, right? Was the bill moving to the floor? Right. So the question before is really, is that right or wrong? I don't think it really pertains to all the dynamics of the day of hearing and who was there, or who got contacted, or who got blocked, or anything else. Is this properly referred to the floor, or should it go to another committee?
Well, Mr. Chairman, in response to that, if what we're being told is correct, and that senators were not properly notified, then that is the issue as to whether or not the bill was properly referred to the floor. In the absence of using what has been custom and usage in the Senate relative to the notification of senators for a vote.
Senator Ortman, you had your hand up, I believe.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I think it would be appropriate for staff to be told not to block messages to members in committees. I think that's perfectly appropriate, but I don't think we need to send this bill somewhere else because we don't like what happened with that vote on Friday. I don't think anybody would ever like to see committees vote without full membership, but that was the reality on Friday, and we were trying to get messages out to a lot of different people to come back and vote. It's unfortunate that that happened with Senator Marty, but I don't think we need to blow it out of proportion. I think we should just move this bill onto the Senate floor. I don't think a revote is appropriate or even a change in the rules that would say pages or committee staff can't help members. I mean, I don't think that makes any sense. So I think that goes too far.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, this wasn't a question of committee members not being allowed to help members. This was a question of staff making sure a member didn't get the help or assistance that member was soliciting.
Mr. Chair,
we
don't know. No one has said it was intentional.
Mr. Chair, on that?
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And Senator Cohen, to your question, it's almost irrelevant by the fact that one of your members called the question. Once they called the question, none of us on either side, the clock was ticking. We didn't have time to get our people back there for a vote. Had not someone called the question, the clock wouldn't have been ticking. We wouldn't be having this kind of conversation right now. So that is what set a clock in motion that usurped all of us from being able to get other members there.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Latch.
If I may, just the reference to on your side, from all I could tell, there was some bipartisan positions on both sides of this bill, from what I've learned. So I don't think it's fair to turn this into a partisan question. I think it's a question of appropriate procedure for those of us who wish to be present in a committee to vote.
Mr. Chair, members, I believe we're here to vote on whether the bill is properly referenced. Was a bill properly referenced as it was voted on, right or wrong, good or bad, blockage or no blockage? Was the reference to the floor the right reference? That's as I read the rule. If there are other issues with this particular bill or the way we do our business in the Senate, it seems to me that's for another day.
Two very important committees to cover. My staff is in the one.
Further discussion by testimony?
Mr. Chairman, as I said at the beginning, I think this bill is one that should have been in state and local. Not here to press that point hard. I do think it's fully appropriate that you notify staff that they are not to block communications between legislators. And I think it's highly relevant to the way this bill progressed. I don't know the outcome if everybody had been present. I just know I had wanted to be there. Somebody was trying to get me, and they were blocked from doing it. And I think that's a very serious violation of the way the Senate has always worked.
Senator Marty, I would agree with you. I don't understand. The only reason I can think that block is a funny word, but if a committee administrator wanted to keep members in that committee by virtue of the fact that they were having a vote, we all compete for votes in this business, especially when we have a lot going on a given day. That may have been a block. I may have had my committee administrator as well say, no, he or she can't go because we got a vote coming up. Is that what we call a block around here? I don't know, but I can't believe that a member of the staff just said, we're not going to give you the message because we don't want you to know that there's a fireworks vote up in room 123 that we don't want you to go to. I don't think that really happens around here.
Mr. Chairman,
I would be very disappointed if it did. Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that Senator Marty's point is well taken as far as we can certainly easily notify staff and make sure that we're all doubly aware of the importance of making sure messages get through to members. So we have the leaders of both caucuses. We also have the Secretary of the Senate present in the room for nonpartisan staff as well. And I think that we could go a long way to addressing Senator Marty's concerns if, number one, if we understand and acknowledge that and can communicate that in some way through all of our staffs, that the communication to senators is very important. The reason we're here is for these votes, and that is of utmost importance. That would be one thing. And then the second thing is...
Senator Gerlach, would you make a motion to the effect that we do that and that Senator Bach is willing that
that needs to be a motion. I think it's understood. There's no motion before us for me to instruct anybody to do anything. I think Senator Marty has clearly made his point, and I think that that ought to be well taken. That can be communicated to all of the staff, and I think that would take care of that. And then to the point of the actual motion before us, which is this properly referred? I think that the votes were taken in the committee. It wasn't an ideal situation, but I think that the votes were cast, and I think we should address the issue before the committee on the
Senator Bach. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm certainly willing to participate in a joint memo out to all the staff. This is a busy time of the session. And maybe a reminder to everybody, as Senator Day used to say, we all paid our $100, and we just need to make sure that people, you know what's going on. We have multiple committees meetings, and if we want to do a joint memo, I'm certainly willing to support it.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, one final quick response.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Senator Marty.
One final quick response into your comment about a chair wanting to keep members there. That's appropriate, but the chair doesn't own the members. The chair can say, I'd like you to stay around for a minute or two for the vote. I don't think there was a vote happening then, which is one of the reasons it was so troubling to me. But even if there is a vote, that should be my choice or Senator Jungbauer's choice, which committee we want to be in. And the chair can tell us, I think we're going to be ready to vote in 2 minutes. Can you stay around for it rather than not let us get the messages so we can make a fair choice? That's my only follow-up on that. Thank you, though.
Fair comment. Senator Langston.
Well, as far as our own responsibility and being in the right place at the right time, when I have two committees that have very important votes, my staff person is sitting in the other one. Yeah. And she will very quickly come over and say they're going to take a vote on it, and I get over there. So I guess I haven't run into that much problem. I know it's very confusing, but we do have staff people for a reason.
And I bet your staff wouldn't ever get blocked.
Yeah, unless she wanted to block it.
Maybe I disagree. Slow. Walk real slow.
Any further discussion on this matter? Senate File 1694. If not, is there a motion with respect to this Rule 21 conveyance to us? Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I would move that... that under Senate under Rule 21 that we suspend the rule. I'm not going to make it right, but I would support moving the bill to the floor.
Sensing what you've said, perhaps the Senate counsel can frame a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I think the motion that you need would be simply to recommend that the committee report for Senate File 1694 be adopted. It's the committee report that's at issue.
That would be my motion, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So motion by Senator Ortman that the committee report on 1694 be adopted. Further discussion and sensing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay, and the report is adopted. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you all. Senator Jeff Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. In the interest of moving this... Well, not moving it quickly, but getting the information out quickly. If I could ask Ms. Fraser, Ms. Higgins, Ms. Mangan to come to the table here to talk with the committee about Senate File 2424. Come on, don't be bashful. I know you're there. So, members, this is a technical...
Senator Michelle, it was suggested. Why don't you go down the end of the table?
Right.
You're more... it's a better backdrop for the cameras. Wonderful.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you just don't want to be close to me. So Senate File 2424, members, is a technical correction in two very specific districts to the court plan, which came out about a month ago with much fanfare. So, members, what I wanted to do is have ask for 5 minutes of your time to listen to this totally nonpartisan presentation on these two technical corrections. The League of Cities, the Secretary of the of State's office, to my side here, a city manager who helps run elections in Edina, which is where one of the changes are. Mr. Chair, I believe because these should not be controversial, that this is something that the committee should feel comfortable advancing. These changes have advanced in the other body, and given the short amount of time that cities have to react to the new plan and to plan for this this cycle's elections, if we are going to act on it, we should do it in some speed. So Mr. Chair, I'd ask these fine ladies can flip a coin as to who goes first, but you have two maps in front of you that talk about the boundary changes. And maybe, Mr. Chair, real quickly, just to show you how small this is, the change suggested in Stillwater would affect 12 people, and the change that involves the drawing of a line literally through the middle of a townhome, through the hallway of a townhome in Edina, that would affect this, the change requested would affect 167 people. So what are we saying goes first? Okay, so Ms. Fraser is going to go first, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Fraser, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Beth Fraser from the Office of the Secretary of State. And every 10 years when we do redistricting, the Secretary of State works with local election officials in reviewing the maps to see if there are technical corrections that are needed. And the statute gives our office the authority to make corrections in cases where the line is ambiguous or misnamed. So, for example, there were a couple cases where the court said, for example, well, the line follows the power line, but then they didn't understand exactly where the power line was. So, you know, they misdescribed it, so we had to say, no, actually, it goes here. Or they said it follows this highway, and the highway actually doesn't quite go where they thought it did. And so in cases where it's ambiguous or misnamed, our office has the authority to just order a correction. In cases where it's clear what the court was ordering but doesn't seem practicable, we are authorized to bring suggestions, technical suggestions, to the legislature for you all to make changes. And so our office has reviewed several instances brought to us and have determined that there are three where we do not have the authority to make a technical change because in these cases it's not ambiguous. The court was clear. It's just not easy to administer. So Ms. Mangan is going to talk about the case in Edina. The case I wanted to talk about was in Stillwater Township, where the court decided, said that the precinct line or that the legislative district line follows Highway 96 instead of the township line, which leaves 12 voters in a different legislative district, which means that by definition they have to be in a different precinct, which causes two practical concerns. One is that it's expensive for a local jurisdiction to create a separate township or a separate precinct. They need to, even if they have a combined precinct polling place, they still have to have a separate ballot. The other problem is that because precinct results have to be reported separately and there are only 12 people living in this precinct, it's going to be fairly obvious who the people voted for. And so voter secrecy kind of goes out the window. And so to protect these voters, the privacy of their vote, and to help Stillwater Township, we would recommend redrawing the line to include these 12 voters in the same legislative district as the rest of the township. And Ms. Mangan can describe the change for Edina.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, Senators, thank you. My name is Deborah Mangan, and I am the city clerk in Edina. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to the committee this afternoon. In 2002, when the legislature redistricted, the boundary line between Districts 41A and 41B was run along the school district boundary between Edina Schools and Richfield School District. The boundary is not a physical location, but when looking at maps, it looks like it may be one. The course follows their founding principles, or that they follow school district lines. The boundary between Edina and Richfield School District bisects a senior citizen cooperative that is located at 7200 and 7220 York Avenue. The result of putting a legislative line here was that I had an apartment complex in two different legislative districts. So to comply with statute, the complex was divided between the two precincts, Edina Precinct 17 and Edina Precinct 18. Residents were notified of the change after the redistricting was completed. But during the 2002 election, there were many complaints from residents. I had several residents who went to one precinct and ended up being disenfranchised from voting in the 2002 election because by the time they were informed by the judges that they were in the wrong place and they went to the other polling place, they were too late to vote. So in 2004, I came before the legislature, asked for special legislation to correct that line, to put that building in one legislative district and one precinct. That was done. It was supported by Representatives Earhart and Seagram and Senator Michelle. When the five-judge panel plan was released on February 21st, I realized again that despite my written and oral testimony, the panel had once again run the 49A, 49B boundary on the school district line. For this reason, I approached Representatives Mazerall and Downey and Senator Michelle asking their assistance in getting correction at the legislature. All three agreed that it would be best for the citizens of Edina involved in this complex to be in one legislative district and one polling location. Therefore, I ask for your favorable consideration of the legislation before you.
So, Mr. Chair, I think everyone's
Senator
found
Michelle.
In their packets, there's literally the maps of the changes that are suggested in this legislation. We also need adoption of the A1 amendment to put it into the form that we are testifying to this afternoon. So I'd ask...
Senator Michelle moves the A1 amendment. It should be here soon. Okay. Any discussion on the A1 amendment? We'll give Senator Langset... you have it read, Senator Langset?
Let me see here now.
Okay. In discussion, all in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The amendment's adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Michelle.
Mr. Chair, so I appreciate the work done on this. I think the adjustments should be viewed as pretty straightforward. We'd like to give, in this case, these two communities time to handle these adjustments and prepare for the next elections. So again, there's no redistricting funny business here. We're just trying to do what's right for those who are running these city elections.
Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Michelle, maybe just if you could explain so I understand the process here. It seems logically to me that if the courts put this plan together, that the process ought to be technical corrections are brought to the court, and then they would take their panel and make these changes and then dictate these changes. It just seems odd that because the legislature and the governor couldn't agree on a plan, the courts put a plan out, and then now we're tweaking, albeit technically, tweaking their plan. How does that end up being legal? I mean, I would think that the courts would need to be the ones to change their own plan.
Senator Gerlach, I'd ask Senate Counsel Mr. Bodden to address that, but my understanding, Senator Gerlach, is that literally the court order itself does contemplate these kind of corrections.
Senate Counsel Bodrum.
Mr. Chairman and members, I have a copy of the court order that was filed on February 21st when the court order districts were released, and the last sentence in that order says that defendants, that is the state of Minnesota, shall conduct elections utilizing legislative districts adopted in this order or any constitutional legislative plan subsequently enacted by the Minnesota legislature and the governor. I think what that proposes really is there's concurrent jurisdiction here, in effect. The courts have put a plan into place, but what the legislature can do if it modifies it, so long as it is constitutional, is make some additional corrections. The other thing I would point out to members is that this has happened before. I think there was reference to that in the testimony. There are two sections that are being repealed in this bill, in Section 3, that were corrections to the court-ordered plan that was issued in 2002. I could go on a little longer, but I do think there is authority for the legislature to make changes.
Throw this one. Okay.
And then lastly, Mr. Chairman, I'm just wondering if that, townhouse that had the line through, if that's what you call a split household. Never mind.
Senator Bach had his hand up.
Well, Mr. Chairman, on along Senator Gerlach's line, there's more than just a municipality here that has something at stake. School districts have something at stake. And it just seems like those affected political subdivisions should file an appeal to the court. I don't have a clue how the school districts might feel about these changes, but certainly affects votes that they're going to have where people are going to vote on referendums also. And maybe we have jurisdiction, maybe we don't, but the changes made in 02 were made apparently after the election was conducted. If I heard the testimony right, that Senator Mitchell supported the changes, then he must have been here when those changes were made, which would have implied that the changes that were made in 02 were made after the election, not before the election. My understanding is there's a procedure where the Secretary of State and or the municipalities can petition the court for a change, and it just seems like that's the avenue that should be taken, and it seems like there's adequate time to do that.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Michelle?
Just a couple points. Let's see. First of all, this does not impact school district boundaries. So we want to be clear on that, that what you have before you, what is before the Rules Committee today, does not impact school district boundaries. We have had to make this change before in this in an earlier legislature. Yes, I was here for that. But I think the point is if we know there's a problem, Ms. Mangan testified that, yeah, they had to live through an election on this, and it was confusing. There were complaints. So if we know there's a problem, and we have a legislative process in place that involves hearings and public notice, isn't that actually preferable to waiting on the judiciary, which, and I'm not even sure there is a process in place where you could have the judicial branch do these kind of technical corrections, certainly not as quickly as these cities or municipalities are asking. Again, I know of no controversy or opposition to either of these.
Senator Michel is correct in that this doesn't change anything with the school district because you live where you live. They're still within the school district boundary. It's just they might be in a different precinct.
Right.
But overall, if there was a referendum, that vote would still be counted in that school district. So it wouldn't affect anything as far as that goes with schools.
Well, Mr. Chairman, but could Senator potentially affect the precinct that you vote in.
Could, but Mr. Chairman, Senator Bach, but those are all in totality within a school district referendum, and so I don't think it really matters as far as any outcome of the vote.
Senator Langsett, did you have your hand up?
I'll move the bill.
Okay. Senator Langsett moved Senate file 2424 as amended. Further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. And no. Senator Bach votes in the negative, I believe.
Yes.
And all in, so the bill or the motion passes, and we stand adjourned.